Amazon is envisioned as a one-stop shop for anything you might wish to buy. Jeff Bezos is the overseer of this massive website, keeping a heavy finger on operations, staying focused on the customer, and thinking on a very long timescale. Jeff Bezos is profiled in journalist Brad Stone's book, The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Steve.
Is Jeff Bezos focused on the long because he is sort of an acolyte of guys like Stuart Brand and Kevin Kelly, who, you know, he started the Whole Earth Catalog, which was sort of a catalog of everything, and started the Clock of the Long Now Foundation?
That's right. Well, I think that's probably, partly the inspiration, but also because the internet kind of demands long-term thinking, right? This is a, Bezos has hitched his wagon, to this transformational revolution. And he saw much earlier than most when he was a vice president at a New York City hedge fund in the early 90s that the internet is growing by leaps and bounds, hundreds of thousands of percent each year. And his challenge was always to build a business, that could succeed and thrive on the internet, not in the moment, but keep up with the incredible growth. I mean, really, it was an unprecedented business opportunity and business challenge. In a way, the internet kind of demanded a long-term perspective.
Yeah, a lot of us saw the internet in 1994 and said, wow, what's this going to be? I could make some money at this. But he actually put a plan together.
Absolutely. I mean, it's what distinguishes entrepreneurs and operators like Bezos from everybody else.
Brad Stone has covered Silicon Valley tech and Amazon for 15 years. He's written for the New York Times, Newsweek, a property once owned by Jeff Bezos' latest jewel, the Washington Post. We'll have to talk about that. He's a writer for Bloomberg Businessweek and author of The Everything Store. In this book, you present a man who was seen as special even as a boy.
As part of the Bezos lore, It's been known that there was an account of a school for gifted education in Houston in the 1970s. The book was called Turning on Bright Minds. I actually went and I found a copy in the Houston Public Library, and I tracked down the author, Julie Ray, who was interested in it back then because her son was going through the program. And it describes a day in the life of someone she calls Tim, and Tim was, clearly an incredibly gifted sixth grader, and he was, he was challenging his teachers, and he was already actually thinking critically in the way he thinks critically now. And, one of the key quotes in that book comes from one of his teachers who said, there's no telling what he can do given a little guidance, and clearly we see that he's gone on to change the world.
Brad Stone is author of The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon. How does Jeff Bezos end up at Desco, working with D.E. Shaw, and what impact does that have on his thinking about business?
Well, in the late 80s and early 90s, Bezos is on Wall Street. He's doing incredibly well in a series of jobs. But at a certain point, I think he gets frustrated with, Wall Street institutions and the conventional way of doing things. And he starts to think about being an entrepreneur. And he goes off with a guy named Halsey Miner, who ended up creating the new site CNET. And they start to work on a business that doesn't do that well. Ultimately, he is convinced to go join another Wall Street bank called D.E. Shaw & Co., which is an incredibly interesting institution, much like Amazon, very secretive, very data-driven. And its founder, David Shaw, was really thought of the company as not just a hedge fund, but an institution where computers could be used to revolutionize any number of businesses.
And Bezos is working there when he comes up with this notion that the internet is the thing to pursue, but he wants to do it independently.
That's right. Well, David Shaw, was a professor at Columbia. He had seen the internet coming for a long time. And I think he had some conviction that it was going to, change the world. And with Bezos, one of his top vice presidents, they start meeting every week to brainstorm ideas. And actually, a number of businesses come out of D.E. Shaw at the time, including a free email business and a financial services business, internet business. And yes, this idea of an everything store, can you create a kind of intermediary online to sell everything, is one of those ideas. But Bezos wants to be an entrepreneur and asks if he can take a variation on that idea, the idea to sell books and go off and do it by himself.
So why books? Why were books the way to get into this market?
In a way, it was tactical. You know, books were easily storable, easily sendable by mail. But you could also capitalize on what the internet offered, which is this idea of infinite selection. You know, a Barnes & Noble, you know, maybe stocks 100,000 books. The internet, you can really list everything. And so Bezos knew very early on that selection was going to be a key advantage to selling on the internet.
He also knew that a book is a book, whether you're buying it from one retailer or another.
That's right. And there were also, you know, two major distributors, so he could easily go and order anything a customer wanted.
The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon. The other lore about Bezos and Amazon is this culture of frugality. Do you see it when you go there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it really pervades the organization from the moment you walk in. You know, it's sparsely furnished. The famous door desks are everywhere. You know, they charge at the cafeteria. You know, a stark juxtaposition to places like Google, which are kind of fantasy lands for their employees where everything is free. But, you know, at Amazon, they're a retailer. They're building, you know, low prices, discounted prices on a very frugal cost structure.
Because Bezos believes the customer is everything.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's what he would say. And it is indeed a very, you know, customer-oriented organization. But look, I mean, they're competitor-focused as well. In the book, I go and I recount, you know, a number of the battles over the years. And, you know, they can be fairly ruthless when they set their sights on a rival.
Yeah. What was the diaper company?
And that's right. Quidsy.
Quidsy.
There's Zappos. There's the current battle with Apple and Google.
The question there is whether they're going to come in even more into the mobile market with their own phone, for example, and a desktop TV to stream their Amazon Prime offerings.
I think the one easy bet to make is that the ambitions of this company and its founder are quite extraordinary.
Every anecdote from a customer matters. You quote one of the Amazon execs saying, "We research each of them because they tell us something about our process." So they get an email and they want to know what this question is about. But at the same time, they have metrics galore. I mean, that seems contradictory to follow those two paths.
That's right. It is a very data-driven organization, and all their meetings start with analyzing the data, what's working, what's not, where is there room for improvement. But occasionally, Bezos or one of his executives or even Amazon customer service will get an email from a customer, and they treat it like an audit. You know, you're right. It's the opposite of the data-driven process. You know, what is this customer saying, and have they identified a problem that we didn't see? And if that's the case, often Bezos will forward it to an employee with just a question mark, a single piece of punctuation. And of course, you know, everyone instantly cancels all their plans and goes about trying to solve the problem.
The thing that you write about is that Bezos believes that truth shakes out when ideas and perspectives are banged against each other.
You know, you talk to any current or former Amazon employee, and they will tell you it's a tough place to work. And it's why, you know, Amazon probably has higher than usual levels of employee turnover, but it's also why it's successful. I mean, Bezos, you know, doesn't believe in what he calls and what is described in Amazon's values as social cohesion, you know, being polite and agreeable for the sake of having a friendly environment. You know, he wants people to, as they say in the values, disagree and commit. And, you know, it's why you know, it's why it can be a tough place to work. But he's, you know, like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or Larry Page at Google, he's got very high standards and he wants his employees to meet them.
You quote managers who say the problem is he'll get up and yell at somebody and describe how it should be done. And he's often right.
That's another Amazon leadership value. It's leaders are right a lot. I think, you know, being right a lot, you know, can excuse probably some rough edges. And you do have to, you know, you have to give it to Bezos. I mean, as easily, you know, criticizable as Amazon is for the way in which it's evaded sales tax collection or pursued some competitors, he really has been remarkably on target, you know, as he pushed almost single-handedly Amazon into the e-reading market, you know, brought publishers kicking and screaming along with him, created things like Amazon Web Services, and of course, you know, the primary retail site, which for, you know, many Amazon customers is a superior way of making their everyday purchases.
Nobody at Amazon wants to get an email from Jeff Bezos that contains a big fat question mark. It means the boss wants answers and he wants them now. In his book, The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon, journalist Brad Stone presents a boss who is relentless in pursuing his vision, customer service first, fast deliveries, provide what the customer wants. Brad Stone is the author of The Everything Store. He's a journalist at Bloomberg Businessweek. He's written about Jeff Bezos for years, and now a book. Why the question mark?
Well, Amazon's a huge company right now. 90,000 employees, 70,000 temporary workers for the holidays. You know, all these divisions. Bezos is a very hands-on leader, but clearly, for a company as diverse as Amazon in 2013, he simply can't spread his time across the entire organization. So the question mark emails are actually a way of auditing different parts of the organization. And, what he does is he'll get an email from a customer, or perhaps an email is forwarded to him from customer service. And if he thinks it identifies a real problem or defect with the organization, he'll forward it very efficiently with only one piece of punctuation to the relevant employee or executive. And they will have to drop everything they're doing and respond to him and fix the problem very quickly.
So describe an incident where that happened.
Well, the famous incident at Amazon and the one I use in my book, I call it the lubricant crisis. About 2010, it came to Jeff's attention that email marketing, and this is the division that sends emails to customers, perhaps advertising a product that they looked at and didn't buy or that they have purchased in the past. And it turned out Amazon's email marketing division was sending these emails to customers who looked but didn't buy in the sexual wellness category, which is fine and might have worked. But Jeff likely concluded that that could potentially be embarrassing to some customers. And so it generated a question mark email, or it's called an escalation inside Amazon. And he was essentially, demanding an answer. Why are we doing this? And it was actually a pretty clarifying moment for the executives involved, because he wanted to just stop advertising via email altogether. I mean, he thought that, this is a department that potentially was kind of out of control and might be embarrassing customers. And even though it brought in hundreds of millions of dollars for Amazon, he's willing to kind of sacrifice that if it wasn't resulting in a good customer experience. Now, ultimately, they hung on to it and they reformed it and they kind of centralized some of the filtering techniques. But it was very emblematic of the way he runs the company.
So you talked to people that had different experiences working there. 97,000 full-time, part-time employees, up 40% from the year just before. So what's your assessment? What kind of boss is he?
Well, I'll tell you what I tried to do as many interviews as I could, probably a couple hundred all told, and kind of discard the most negative and the most positive. And the picture that resulted was, it's a challenging place to work, right? Standards are high. The pace is unrelenting. The boss demands the best. I think he's tough. I think he's right in the mold of Bill Gates and, Larry Page and Steve Jobs. And, on some days, probably pretty tough and pretty relentless. But at the same time, it's partly why Amazon is so successful and why, Bezos has gone from a company with three employees in a garage almost 20 years ago to one that's really shaping the way people shop and people read.
So when I read that he says things to his employees or his lieutenants like, are you lazy or just incompetent? I'm sorry, did I take my stupid pills today? Do I need to go down and get the certificate that says I'm CEO of the company to get you to stop challenging me on this? Which doesn't sound like he really wants a challenging environment. I mean, what should I take away from that? That he's tough, but is he fair?
Well, that he's tough and that he's clever when he disagrees, and that it can be an adversarial place. I list some of those statements in the book, and they were kind of the greatest hits, right? Like everybody at Amazon has those one or two examples, and in fairness, probably some of those are a couple years old, and I think he's probably modulated his style somewhat.
How come?
Well, I mean, I think, look, all leaders evolve and, get better at some things over time. And the kinds of things that work when you're a company of 20,000 employees don't necessarily work when you're a company of 90,000.
Brad Stone is author of The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon. You talk about his laugh. Describe his laugh.
Well, I mean, it's the iconic kind of characteristic about Jeff, right? It's unrestrained. It is loud. It occurs at unusual times. And the funny thing is, it's not necessarily when a joke is told. In a way, he has almost weaponized the laugh. I actually saw it recently compared to Tom Cruise's smile. In a weird way, the laugh can put a little pressure on you. And one of his former executives actually said, don't mistake the laugh. Don't misunderstand it. He's punishing you for not meeting his high standards.
Yeah, it seems in reading the book that it is a weapon, that he is using it to knock you off your feet a little bit.
I don't know if it's intentional or not, but certainly a signature part of his style.
How many times have you interviewed him?
Probably about a dozen times since I started covering Amazon in the late 90s, but always around product announcements. He's actually very available to the press when he's trying to either brand the company in the early years or, you know, more recently to pitch a service. He recently did a ton of interviews around the new Kindle Fire. It's when you ask him to reflect, you know, to go back to this or that deal that, you know, he tends to be quite secretive. But he was a supporter of this project and said he was rooting for me and opened some doors as I did some research.
You have in this book, in the back of this book, his reading list. There's a lot of books about being a manager. And I just don't know if any of the books say, berate your employees or laugh at them in an unsettling way.
Well,
is he carving his own path?
I mean, he definitely is. But I will say that Jim Collins' management books are so central to modern management, and Amazon read them very closely. Those books are unsparing. Collins talks about ejecting employees that don't believe in the culture out of the organization. But it is one remarkable thing about Amazon is that it's a reading culture. They get together and they read on top of all their other obligations. And Bezos is a careful reader, and he's extracted a lot of wisdom and a lot of, kind of insight from the books that I mentioned in the appendix. And they've informed key decisions at Amazon over the years.
Including the uncertainty principle, this idea of in the book, The Black Swan.
The narrative fallacy.
The narrative fallacy, yeah. That's right.
That's right. That human tendency to see order and story amid otherwise random chaos. I'm not sure, I necessarily personally believe in the narrative fallacy. I believe as a journalist, and maybe I have to, that you can talk to enough people and kind of collate their memories. And sure, there's going to be uncertainty at the margins. But if you kind of draw a straight line through the collective memories, you can get to the real story.
But why did he decide, given that he had this concern about the narrative fallacy, that he would let you write this book?
Well, I was never asking for permission. I would say I was begging for forgiveness. But I think, they understood that Amazon's changing the world and this story was going to be written.
Are we in the age of Amazon?
I think there's no doubt we are. I mean, if you look at not just the retail site and not just, the digital business, which is still early, but, the cloud business that has changed the way companies in Silicon Valley are run and now government agencies are running their services on Amazon servers, and Amazon's international reach, the strength it has in Europe and in Asia. I think it's clearly positioned, along with Google and likely Apple and maybe Facebook, to be one of the tentpole companies of the century.
He wants to go to space, and he's got the clock of the long now, 10,000-year clock. That's kind of the approach he's taking.
And the Washington Post. I mean, one of the amazing things about him is how he has actually managed to somehow innovate against his own time, right? To just be able to stretch himself to do all these things and the Family Foundation and his venture capital firm and his obligations as a parent. Incredible scope of responsibility.
Brad Stone is senior writer for Bloomberg Businessweek, author of The Everything Store, Jeff Bezos and the Age of Amazon. Amazon has opened a fashion center in New York City. It has TV shows and movies in development and may soon be announcing an Amazon phone and a set-top box for streaming Amazon Prime offerings. New York Times reported yesterday that although Amazon stock is at record highs, analysts expect the company to post a loss when it releases third-quarter numbers this week.